You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modgepodge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe, and I'm in the green room with David Goss and Matt, the armchair analyst Doyle, who is a little bit bitter this morning. I don't know whether it's the nil-nil draws. I don't know if it's the East Coast hustle and bustle. I don't know if you've just gotten soft in your old age, but he just can't take it here. He walked into the office and just immediately complaining.
It's not the East Coast. I think it's Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
I don't know that I could survive living in Midtown Manhattan.
Two weeks in Midtown in a shoebox-sized hotel. It's not the best.
Yeah, 2 weeks in Midtown sounds like a horror movie. That's the beginning
of
something
so
terrible.
So you have sympathy for me.
I know that
you guys are in my corner.
We are. I've been accused of not having much empathy last night after I was okay with Josie and Michael being booed at Red Bull Arena. We'll get to that in just 1 second.
Because you've never been booed at your job.
I'm pretty sure we got heckled pretty good at Red Bull Arena after that Costa Rica game.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to equate those. They're absolutely not the same.
I'm going
to
start heckling you more here and see how you
do. Should. Wow. You should. I would appreciate that.
I mean, Gassman has
get me out of my comfort zone.
Has the thinnest skin of anybody in media. One like semi-negative tweet at him, and he throws a fit.
I don't even look at the ads.
The 2017 Audi MLS Cup playoffs roll on. It is Tuesday, and we waited because, Vancouver, Seattle just gave us absolutely nothing to talk about on Monday. So now we have 3 games to talk about. The 4th and final conference semifinal first leg goes down Tuesday night at MAPFRE Stadium. Columbus Crew SC hosting NYCFC at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Up north, it's in TVA Sports and TSN. Third segment, we'll get to the Hot Take Hotline, of course, 401-206-0-MLS. Call us, text us, email us, extratime@MLSsoccer.com. For efficiency, for clarity's sake, we're going to split this up into Eastern Conference and Western Conference, and God knows we are delaying the Western Conference to the second segment after 2 nil-nil draws. Sorry.
It's not just the scores.
I know.
It's the quality of play.
Correct.
And
because
the will to win games.
Right. Or lack thereof.
We're okay with 0-0s.
I mean, Columbus-Atlanta, rightfully so, said was a great game, entertaining game, full of attacking verve and ambition. Right now, the ambition is lacking out west, and we'll dive into maybe why that is.
And speaking of Columbus, that's what you call a transition.
Thank you, Dave. This is teamwork. See, we're getting it together here on this Tuesday morning.
I'm Alex. Let's
start with Crew SC. And look, it's an opportunity for Crew fans to kind of do the purest thing they can at this point, which is show how much they care about their team and support it in a playoff game. Yeah. Support it in a situation that their team needs it, and with that support could make a run that who knows what will happen. You know, we've covered the news on this show. There's a possibility that they could move. They're looking for a solution in Columbus, but this could be a huge step forward for them. And Doyle, they're the hottest team in the league.
They are. They are 10 unbeaten down the stretch, including a good 2-2 draw at NYCFC on the last day of the season. Obviously, we know what they did in Atlanta. They've gotten answers defensively. In terms of being dominant on set pieces, in terms of limiting their mistakes, and then maybe they've gotten off the hook a couple times.
I was wondering how you were going to phrase that, by the way.
Yeah, they're not a mistake-free team, but they have limited them compared to earlier in the season. And in Will Trapp and Artur, they have central midfield tandem that's been really, really solid in a way that I don't think they were earlier in the year. And that has allowed them to attack with 4 more often rather than having to throw everybody forward. It's a little different than what we've seen in the past from Greg Berhalter's teams, but it's working right now. The one caveat, though, is 10 unbeaten down the stretch. 9 of those 10 were against sub-playoff teams. They were against teams below the playoff line. They are not facing that in NYCFC. That said, they haven't been great.
No, they've got 1 win in their last 5. It's that attacking foursome that I think is what gives Crew SC fans hope here, Dave, because this is a 4 that can go out and get goals. They need Justin Miram to be the Justin Miram that he was for, say, the first 3-4 months of the season. They need the Justin Miram that when he gets on his right foot, it's like a scalpel, and he carves teams up, and he sews them up, and he sends them packing. I mean, he's a guy who can completely change the game, and I still just haven't seen that final product from Pedro Santos, so I'm not willing to put him yet in the same sort of category as far as productiveness, because they're going to need it against this NYCFC team and David Villa. Villa comes back against Chrissy and shows, hey, I'm still around. Like, just because Diego Valeri stole the MVP spotlight doesn't mean that I've gone away here. I'm still a 20-10 player, basically, in 2017. Where do the chances come from against its NYCFC backline? Because Kayans has been he's been the key to this kind of step forward, as has Alexander Ring and Yanja Herrera. Yes. All of a sudden, this is not the same team that got smoked off the field against Toronto last year. This is an opportunity of redemption for NYCFC.
Yeah, it's the one-on-ones versus those fullbacks. It's the two guys you mentioned, Miram and Pedro Santos, taking on whoever NYCFC rolls out there, Struna and I guess Matarita at this point. But Miram, we don't know if that foot works the way it's supposed to, because he's been fantastic this year, but he's dealing with that injury. He had to come off early against Atlanta. That changed the game, because he's a guy who could have scored on the break in stoppage time and could have scored in some of those opportunities they created. Higuain's been really, really good the last few games. He's got the ability to play that ball, whether it's between the two center backs or just clip it over the top. And one of the things that I think about coming into this series is, can Sean Johnson read that as well as Brad Guzan did in the last game? Mm-hmm. And come off his line and make those plays. That's not the player that he is. In the past, he's been better with that under Patrick Vieira. It's a more cohesive unit. But those are the chances. And on the flip side for NYCFC, the attack hasn't been great. And that was what they were for 2 years. And then it all slowed down. I know Villa was out, but you have to have question marks about that.
That the last game, the 2-2 draw against Columbus, that was the only time, I think, since the start of August that they've scored more than one goal in a game.
And one was a gift from Zach Steffen.
Correct. Though he also took a few away.
Right, that's true.
I mean, NYCFC actually attacked pretty damn well in that one. Steffen was just huge. I do think it goes back to those wingers. Rodney Wallace and Jack Harrison were fantastic in the first half of the season. But since the Gold Cup break, both of them have kind of trailed off. I think Harrison only has 2 goals, 1 assist in the second half of the year. That's not good enough. Going into the playoffs when you're supposed to be like the second guy, the guy who is helping David Villa the most carry in terms of carrying the load, that is not good enough. Rodney Wallace is still active, but the cutting edge hasn't been there. And for whatever reason, Patrick Vieira hasn't quite trusted Jonathan Lewis or Kyrie Shelton to get it done. So there are some questions. But
I think there's a reason with Kyrie Shelton.
Kyrie Shelton was good last year,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, there's something going on under the surface there, though. If you've paid attention to his social media posts and some of that. I mean, look, hey, that's modern soccer, dude. That's modern soccer. Yeah. There's something bubbling, and it's
I think part of the issue for him is he's not a center forward. He has a build that looks like he could play up there. And with David Villa out, Patrick Vieira was looking for someone to fill minutes there, and I don't think Kyrie Shelton stepped up to do it. And that's frustrating for a player, because you don't feel like you can be your best self on the field. And it's frustrating for a coach who, if you put Patrick Vieira in at goal, he'd probably make 5 saves and win you a game.
Yeah, look, I'd throw Maxi Morales into this as well. He's not been productive
since
July either.
And a lot of this comes off Villa. Maxi Morales making late runs and linking up with Villa. Rodney Wallace, a lot of his early goals were him being super aggressive in the box, but in moments that Villa either pulled away attention defensively or helped set him up. So that is a big effect to the fall off to a lot of these guys.
There's legacy is always something we talk about with the playoffs, whether it be coaches or players or, you know, ownership, whatever it might be. You make your legacy in these moments. I think everybody kind of accepts that and knows that inherently. David Villa has been one of the best players in MLS history during his years in the league so far. Just banging in goals, wins an MVP, maybe would have this year and maybe still will this year depending on the voting, but if not for Diego Valeri. Does Patrick Vieira need a championship or at least a playoff run? I mean, their one playoff appearance here is an embarrassment against Toronto FC. Do they need something from this series, knowing that Vieira's future in MLS is not necessarily some certain thing that it's going to be long and fruitful, and long being the operative word there? He may move on. He's that kind of coach and that kind of personality in the world game. And then David Villa, I think he's 36. Mm-hmm. So, you know, while he did it this year, he can't do it forever, although I'm not betting on David Villa to slow down. Does he need something from this series? Mm-hmm. Do they need to win this series?
Yep, they do. If they lose this one, they're a regular season team. That's what they go down as. Patrick Vieira put together a squad that plays attractive soccer in the regular season, but doesn't know how to get it done in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're Carlos Valderrama's Tampa Bay Mutiny.
Yeah.
And when this is a debate we had on the show last night on what is the name of the show?
MLS Playoff Central.
Thank you.
Yes.
You know, we remember Carlos Valderrama, but we remember that era of MLS as belonging to Marco Echeverri, because Echeverri, even though he didn't have as big a global profile, he had the stats, he had the goals and the assists, and he had the trophies. And whatever happens in this playoffs here will go a long way towards, in these playoffs as a whole, will go a long way towards who we remember this series or this era belonging to. If Seattle wins another title, it's the Nico Ladero era. You know, if Toronto FC get it done, it's the Sebastian Giovinco era. NYC get it done, we start talking about David Villa in the way that we talked about Robbie Keane, Marco Echeverri, and a lot, you know, the greats of the past.
Look, his legacy is assured. He's David Villa. He's won a World Cup.
For
he's
sure.
Done everything that you can do, really. But MLS legacies are a little bit more complicated. You got to do it here. That's where it applies, and David Villa and Patrick Vieira and the rest of NYCFC have that opportunity on Tuesday night. Columbus Crew SC hosting NYCFC at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN, TSN, TVA Sports. Crew SC, the darlings here, what does a playoff series win mean for them? I think they need to win this game, but I don't think that this is a team that on the road you can count as look, they did it in, well, Citi Field, and then they also did it in Atlanta. So this is not some punchless team on the road. I just continue to believe that when you have an opportunity at home, especially with a NYCFC team that's been a little bit listless, you got to go for it, and you got to try to punch them in the mouth, especially early. We've seen how that changes games.
There's no question that they have to come out and, I think, jump on NYCFC early, because if they come out and they get in a shell and NYCFC get that early road goal, that's death. It, not just for the series, but in terms of what it'll do to the crowd, which is already, I think, probably going to be pretty demoralized. They have to come out and play with blood in their eyes. And that doesn't mean rash tackles and everything, though you can get away with that in the playoffs. It means coming out on the front foot, playing a lot like they played in Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know, they had purpose and they had intentionality. Obviously, it's 120 tough minutes, and it wasn't that long ago, so you do wonder about turnaround time, and I think that's part of the reason that we see teams struggle with first legs. But this is, you know, this is pretty much existential for these players at this point, and they have to play like it.
All right, let's move on here. Watch that game tonight. Of course, we'll break it down on Friday. Thursday, Seattle and Vancouver go at it at 10:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. That's the first second leg of the conference semis. Out east, Toronto FC went to New York, or went to Harrison, depending on your perspective here, and won 2-1. Dave, you were at that game. Two away goals for Toronto. The Red Bulls got... I don't want to say they got eviscerated Jesse Marsh after the game, but he called out basically the whole squad. But you felt like this was deja vu.
Yeah, they got Red Bulled. I've been at this game for four straight years. I saw it against the Revs, saw it against Columbus, I saw it against Montreal last year. It's the same game every time from the Red Bulls hits. We give up an early goal when it was going to be a tight series anyway. We commit numbers forward, which is a little bit dangerous, but we end up getting a goal. And then you have the energy going your way. You're not able to get over the hump. Then you give up the second goal. Now, normally it occurs in the second leg. So they've got that going for them, that they've got a second chance. But when you look at the way this game played out, you have a question mark, which is, can they try and do the things they did offensively and not give up five goals in Toronto? And if they can't, then at what minute do you deploy a more attacking style in Toronto? Because I don't know that they can create opportunities out of the 5-4-1, 5-3-1. How many players do I have on the field right now?
5-3-1.
Yeah.
Yep.
5-4-1, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's right.
Yeah, oh, my God.
That's what I thought.
It's actually a 3-3-3-1. But
okay. Exactly. Yeah. I don't know that they can create enough opportunities out of that system against this Toronto team. Drew Moore's health is a big part of that. So then you bring on Verón, who I think helps you, and then I'm not sure if they can defend against Toronto in that scenario. So you're taking a risk either way. It's a management of minutes for Jesse Marsh. But if I was a Red Bulls fan, I would hate myself right now. Just because it's the same thing. Because guess what we're talking about right now? Can Gonzalo Verón get it done? And we don't know if he can. And will a formation tweak at late in the season be the change? That was the exact conversation. If you played this show from last year against Montreal, exact same conversation. And if you played it 2 years ago against Crew, it would be the exact same conversation. It is, we have something that's tried and true all season, and we get to the playoffs, and now we need to find something else.
Yeah, that can't have been fun to listen to for Red Bulls fans.
Sorry,
Bill
Red
Carroll.
Bulls fans.
Bill Carroll, I'm sorry, man. Yeah, I'm sorry. Look, 2-1 is a tough result for them. That's obvious. Two Ray goals really sets Toronto FC up, and this is a team that's lost once at home all season long to Montreal in that bizarre high-scoring game that I just don't think there's any way that the Red Bulls replicate. So Red Bulls results that'll work to get them through. 1-0 doesn't do it, so even that win is not enough because you have the two away goals. And then you're talking about, okay, 2-1 would get us to extra time. 2-0 would win it, and then if you score more
outside
than two,
outside of 1-0, they win the series anyway,
right,
and they get.
Right. But, I mean,
they got to win it.
Nobody's
Toronto,
done that.
Yeah.
So in Toronto,
now,
I feel like.
Me and Doyle had a disagreement. I thought that after Drew Moore went out, it looked chaotic for Toronto, and I think it's a big issue. He seems to think that Air Hagelin, who's a legend, obviously, can get it done.
Hagelin, for the first half of the season, was Toronto FC's best defender. He really was, and I didn't think he played badly last night. They ended up losing their edge at the first 25 minutes of the second half, but then they got it back. And they, you know, nobody really dominated the last 20 minutes of the game. It was a great goal from Javinko, and that was really about it. But the Red Bulls are going to play with desperation, and Toronto FC are going to need to be organized at the back, and they probably will lose a little something of that if Moore can't go. He's a veteran. He's vocal. He knows how to organize a championship-winning defense. He's done it.
Nothing got over them or through them when he was on the field. Nick Hagelin misses a – and I know he hasn't played in a while. Mm-hmm. Mistimes a header. Bradley Wright Phillips gets in behind. Cleaner touch. That game's 2-1 Red Bulls.
Yeah.
That was the best
but
look
that's
of
like,
the game.
That's like Bradley Wright Phillips, though.
But
cleaner
not
touch.
A single
if you need a consolation
okay.
goal down 3-1, in, you know, then
I didn't
Bradley Wright
we
Phillips is your man.
To the Bradley Wright Phillips bashing moment.
I mean, he's scored a lot of goals, but like you can get away with that against him in those big moments. He doesn't tend to come through outside of 2014.
Sebastian Giovinco was Glass. Pretty quiet for most of this game, but it doesn't really matter with Sebastian Giovinco because all you got to do is like nick the back of his ankle anywhere around that left hash spot, maybe 5 yards out from the 18, and it's a PK for him.
Red Bulls fans right now are saying you don't even have to nick the ankle.
Oh, they're saying Josie Altidore fouled before that. Should have been called.
Heard a lot of that. But what we talked about with this team was that attacking three with Vasquez can create chances by themselves.
Yeah.
That's what you saw in the first goal. Obviously, it was a couple mistakes from Red Bulls, but you can't make mistakes against Toronto FC. They should have had two or three in the first half.
Yeah.
Josie had an opportunity. He held on a little long, even though he cut like four defenders anyway. But this team's, they're just really good. And now going home, they have a chance to play even better in the attack.
Yeah, and they're not actually playing that well.
Yeah.
I think they're actually kind of in a slump, Toronto, if you compare how they're playing now to what they were doing, you know, maybe through mid-September, that just haven't been as sharp. But they're still going on the road and getting 2-1 playoff victories and making it look, I don't want to say easy, but like, you had the interview with Alex Bono after the game, and he was like, yeah, it was an okay win.
Yeah.
We played all right. It was fine. We'll take 2-1 on the road. I guess that'll work.
It was like a C-plus effort.
Where literally every single other team in these playoffs would be just like bowing down after that result, being like, we are the champions.
Yeah.
We're going so far.
Listen.
Their expectation is nothing short of MLS Cup. I just don't think to them this isn't a series that gets their blood pumping. Like, yeah, they want to win it, and they're going to win it.
Yeah, they were fired up off that first goal.
It kind of feels like, okay, this is inevitability for us. We know we're the better team, so let's go prove it. And by the way, we're going to have some motivation because everybody's going to boo us.
Right.
Everybody's just going to be boo-burdened the entire time. And Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore got the FU chance in this one from the South Ward and I'm sure other people in the stadium. A lot of people were unhappy about this. Josie Altidore himself said, you know, he thought they were classless, although I didn't think his comments – were as like pointed as a lot of people made them out to be. He said, you know what, I get it. I understand why they would do this. It's a little bit disappointing. I was not disrespectful towards these folks. You know, it's my first club. I have admiration for it. And, you know, I get it. The World Cup has people upset. Like, so when I saw the headlines that were like, Jozy Altidore pushes back, I was like, well, he just kind of, you know,
yeah,
expressed mild disappointment and said he understood what the deal was, yeah, and said it was classless. Is Channing F.U. classless? Yeah, it's classless.
Also, just from being there, some of the specific things that I heard said to him were classless. So I don't think, and I think what he's saying there is, boo me.
Right.
That's fine. And booing me is booing me. It's what you're allowed to do. Some of the other stuff I think was upsetting.
This is part of what the conversation is last night. Is it offensive, in my opinion, to use curse words? No. If you cross the line of offensiveness towards racism, homophobia, going after somebody's kids,
religion,
the personal beliefs, like that is 1,000% crossing the line.
And
so those people in the crowd that were doing that, get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, you got to, you know, be an adult.
And
be
I think
a,
that's
be a part of civil society, but
and I think that's the stuff he was reacting to. I think that if you ask Mike in that quote, he's saying it's okay to boo me. He's saying that first of all, you're an athlete. You're going on the road in any sort setting. You're going to be booed. The other team doesn't like you. The fans of the other team don't like you. On top of that, you have this situation where you are on their national team. You failed. They were your fans. They're upset, and they're going to boo you when you're there. I think they both fully get that, and I don't think that's an issue. So that's how it seems to me.
Yeah, it's the other stuff.
Yeah.
It's agreed. The, you know, the, there was, and we didn't hear it, but Gasman was there, heard some stuff that just should not be said to anybody.
Our eyes and ears. That's why we send Dave there, just to make sure we have that information when we come in here.
So here's your eyes and ears stuff. One is the Jesse Marsh Felipe Martins hug that you saw on TV was about a full minute.
Yeah, it came right after Felipe Martins cubed poor Victor Vasquez, who was not going to be doing any jumping jacks for a while.
And Felipe's coming over, and Jesse's just got his arms wide open out for a hug.
Yeah.
And so that was one of them. And Sasha and Jesse in the first half yelling at each other. And just, I think that there was a game plan, and they went out and they gave up the goal early, and the team really didn't react the way Jesse expected them to. And I think when you watch, if you go back and watch the game, Damian Perrinel, when he gets on the ball in midfield with acres of space, doesn't want to move into that space.
Yeah.
And he had the assist for Chicago from about 30 yards out, and he had a really good shot in about the 55th, 58th minute from 30 yards out in the entire first half. He and Murillo don't want to move into that space, and they're scared and they're worried. And Kleshchen and Felipe are the guys, I think, who are supposed to revitalize that team.
Jozy, Manmark, and Felipe just taking away that outlet for the Red Bulls doesn't allow them to build the way they want to build, and you got to give credit to Greg Vanney for that.
And
it was a good move.
And Javinko drops under Jozy, and then Vasquez doesn't stick to one side.
No.
So there are moments where Murillo has 35 yards to run into, and that's the game that TFC's asking him to do it, and he doesn't want to do it. And that, for the Red Bulls, is the issue we've talked about all season, is Aaron Long's a really good center back. I don't think the other two are. And it's not just defensively, it's offensively as well.
Can we talk about Murillo real quick? Because I felt like he got the bus backed over him a little bit on that Jovinko free kick. The play, as they explained afterwards, and I think Luis Robles kind of did it the best, was that, you know that Jovinko can go both corners. So you don't want to give him the non-wall side. You don't want to allow him to just have a free go at that side. So you say, look, we're going to dare you to go over the wall, and we're going to have Murillo drop and try to play the Dax McCarty role of years past and head it out. He was not able to get there on that free kick. And, of course, Luis Robles, his starting position was way too far to the other post to have any chance at getting a hand on that ball. You know, I heard them talking about this, and I'm like, wait, so you're asking your defender to turn and run at the post as the best free kick taker in league history by miles and miles and miles. I mean, like, it's not even close. Since 2015, he's got 14 free kick goals, Jovinko does. And the next closest has, like, 6, which is Drogba, who was a freak as well. Mm-hmm. And then Plata has 3. Nobody else has more than 2. Like, to me, that's overthinking yourself a little bit. To expect Murillo to, like, be able to make that play every single time, that's just asking for a lot. I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
No, I agree with you, because if Jovinko's going to put in the top corner, Murillo's not going to stop that.
That wasn't in the top corner.
Exactly. So now you're defending against something that Robles should be able to save. That's how I see that scenario, is you're deciding, and I get that Jovinko's better than everyone else. If Jovinko does what he did in Atlanta, Murillo's not going to save that
right in
that scenario. So now you're solving a problem that doesn't exist in a place, which is at that height, a goalkeeper has to make that save. And if not, then bring Murillo back and have him standing on the line. and you're giving up the offside trap, no, and that's your decision.
If you have Murillo standing on the line, then Toronto puts three guys right in front of Robles and completely unsights him, and it's a layup for Giovinco. Having guys standing on the line on a free kick does not work. It's not a corner kick. Stop.
That's not the solution. I agree, but it just felt like overthinking it, and we know where Giovinco likes to go. It's directly over the wall. He's the best in the league at that. I would argue he's one of the best in the world at that. And by basically saying my goalkeeper is not going to cover this spot, I'm going to put it on a defender who's running backwards and trying to track the ball as it comes over the wall.
I get what you're saying, but you rely upon a guy to do a job, and I'm sure it's something that they've practiced in training a million times, and he didn't get it done.
No, it didn't work. I'm hesitant to put it on Murillo in that sense. Make sure you watch the second leg of this one. It's going to be good. That one goes down on Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, Toronto Red Bulls at BMO Field, ESPN, TVA Sports, TSN. We're going to go to break. On the other side, 2-0 draws, but plenty to talk about as we get into ambition in the MLS Cup playoffs.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Come on! Never mind the tone when I told Billy Tony. Listen to my tone, you ain't catching you a Tony. A wall when they walk, when you running with a shotty. Why you running from us?
Back on Extra Time Radio, driven by MLSsoccer.com and Sirius XMC Channel 85 onto the Western Conference, where we will not talk about any goals, but we will talk about some drama in the form of video review. And then the tactics that, I don't know, I just leave me a little bit disappointed because I want to see teams at their best come playoff time. Let's start with the game from Monday night, guys. That would be Houston hosting the Portland Timbers, or as Dave said when he walked into the office this morning, Timbers 2. Injuries is what we'll start with here.
But not much.
Because the Timbers are the number one seed in the West. But they're looking they're looking like a shell of their former self, and it's like it's bizarre. It's not just straightforward injuries at this point. You know, Fernando Adi hasn't played since August 6th. I don't think anybody really expects him to come back anytime soon and make a huge difference here. You knew that David Guzman had that knee strain that he suffered against the Caps on the final day of the season. Probably not going to feature in this one. But then we find out that Sebastian Blanco isn't going to play in this game, like right before the whistle. He had warm-ups. He decided it was too excruciating because he has second-degree burns over much of his right foot because he spilled boiling water on himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's out of the pantheon of weird sports injuries. And, you know, Darren Maddox knows a little bit of something about this. Mm-hmm. I think back to, the weird ones from many years past, Mark Quinn, who neither of you will know about, a Kansas City Royal who, broke his leg to play fighting his brother, guys who injured themselves chopping wood, guys who fell downstairs.
Joba Chamberlain got hurt playing on a trampoline with his kid.
Right.
Not just, that I ever care about Joba
it just, Chamberlain. It was like a – it just – it feels like a – like, everything that could happen is happening because then Larrys Mabiala has a hip injury during the game,
uh-huh,
and he has to come off. Darlington Nagbe subbed out after 59 minutes with a slightly tight hamstring, according to Porter, who they're not that worried about it, but he still had to leave the game. And then this is probably the biggest blow. Diego Chará is going to be out for the rest of the playoffs, you presume, because he has a broken fifth metatarsal. What? If you're a Timbers fan, you have got to just...
You didn't include the fact that David Guzman didn't even dress because he has...
No, he
did. Well, I did.
He started with that.
You don't listen to me, Dave, and it's okay. But this just, it feels
what
like...
What show are you hosting?
I know. It feels like every, it feels like all the dominoes, just like a Rube Goldberg machine of injuries here.
Yeah, everything seemed set up for the Timbers, and then by halftime, everything seemed set up for Houston. Portland had been, 8-3-2 down the stretch. They had the MVP in Diego Valeri. Yeah, they don't have all their pieces together, but you could make the argument that they were working better without Adi in particular, just because Maddox opens up more space, and that means Valeri gets more touches in the box, and he's more of a finisher, and hey, he finishes pretty good. But by halftime, that's out the window. Mabiala hurts. If he can't go, they have Roy Miller, I guess, is partnering Ridgewell in central defense, and that's not
it. Just was already
ideal.
A weakness. The backline was a weakness for the Timbers.
I'm not sure I agree with that. When they have Ridgewell and Mabiala healthy, they've been pretty good. But now they don't. But beyond that, losing Diego Chara, even if Guzman comes back, we've seen it since 2012 or whatever. When the Timbers don't have Diego Chara, they are a different and much lesser team.
They have not won this year without him in the lineup. They did not win in 2016 without him in the lineup. It's been since 2015 that they've won without him in the lineup. That doesn't bode well. Now, they got a little bit fortunate in the sense that the Houston Dynamo are hot trash on the road, at least from a results perspective, although they've gotten a little bit better lately. Yeah. And all they need is a scoring draw.
Yeah, I would argue that they have not been hot trash the second half of the season.
Okay, other than I would take that argument and say
1-2-5, which is not great, but
they don't need to be great.
Exactly.
They just got to be good enough.
So they've had, eight results, and I think five of them that they've had on the road in the second half of the year. If they replicate that at Providence Park against T2, then that will be enough to see Houston through. I'm not saying that they're favorites, but it's...
Chinte's got, he's got two goals in him. He's going to create them.
I'll tell you
time.
What. If Chinte gets two goals, then, yeah, they will go through.
Vicente Sanchez, in case you are not in the know on the Chinte lingo here. The Houston Dynamo... Wilmer Cabrera didn't complain about the video review reversal here. Albert Elise was taken down by Mabiala in the first half. Mabiala got the ball, to be fair, but Sabiga called it a penalty straight off. He went to the box. He reviewed. He said, okay, I made a clear and obvious error, and he reversed it. I don't think it was a clear and obvious error. I thought that it was a terrible scissor tackle straight through the attacker, and I'm not really that concerned about the fact that you nicked the ball away first when you're willing to go through the man.
I don't think the second leg follows all the way through to make it a scissor tackle. I think the second leg naturally comes forward, but you can see him firmly stop his leg and not close on Elise's legs, which is what makes it dangerous, which is what makes it like that scissor motion, which then you have the chance of breaking.
Whatever, it's still a foul.
Yeah,
it's still a foul. It's not a red card.
A little bit of contact. What?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Not blown away by it.
Yeah, David Guss and Tuesday Night Mets League will be like, what are you talking about?
I was confused by the use of video review in this game because I thought it overturned that call without, I think, a clear and obvious error. And then
Tyler Derrick fouled Darren Maddox.
100%. 100%.
And like for no reason as well. Came way out of the goal mouth. There was no review of that.
Yeah. So I think there should have been two penalties in this game.
Props to Wilmer Cabrera. And really, Albert Elise and the rest of the Dynamo, because after this game, it would have been really easy for them to sit around and complain and bitch and bitch and bitch about how this changed the game. And to their credit, they didn't do it.
Andrew,
Wilmer said,
"You're working blue."
Oh, come on! That's
I think that Wilmer Cabrera has a young team and a team that's not experienced in the playoffs, and I think it would have been a mistake for him to come out and panic about and complain about the PK call because it would set a precedence for those players. And I think right now he's still. The cliche of halftime, he's still coaching this team. And I think it would have been the wrong idea for him to come out and be like, we should have won this game. We got robbed by the ref. Rather than come out and say, it wasn't our call, but we played well enough to win this game 1-0 through that PK, and we're going to go to Portland and we're going to win this game. And I think that's what he did.
Yeah.
And I think that's the correct way to coach this team. And he's got the pulse of that team. It's a young front line. It's a young squad. There's a couple question marks in midfield and on the back line right now with them. So it's not like it's a foregone conclusion, but they have a chance to go to a Western Conference Finals, which he's already said would be gravy.
Yeah, I mean, he already said that getting here is gravy. So they're just kind of working with house money. That game's going to be on Sunday, the return leg here in Portland. Still TBA on times and TV, but we'll let you know as soon as we do. And, of course, it's on MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app. The Houston Dynamo in great position with a 0-0, especially considering these injuries. Pay attention, because who can heal the fastest may determine this series.
Just because I don't want to be a hypocrite, I said it about the San Jose Earthquakes. If Amobi Okugo and Lawrence Olam start in midfield, this is also a 2011 playoff team for the Portland Timbers, because I called the Quakes that as well.
Yeah.
It is brutal. That would be brutal to watch.
Yeah, look, Caleb Porter is just kind of – I imagine this morning he's talking with his training staff and just kind of like staring at his desk at the report that gets pushed across it and just kind of shaking his head.
I mean, if you get Nagy
back – I have them in the final in my bracket.
Me too. I had them in the final because I was worried about Dempsey's suspension and Ozzie Alonso's injury and Gustav Svensson's injury. And talking about injuries, it looks like I picked the wrong team.
Yeah, it looks like you were a little bit misguided there. Yeah. Sometimes the instincts going through gut doesn't work out.
So if Nagby's healthy, he plays in central midfield. That gives you a player you can play through. He put Ebobise up top to move Maddox out wide to try and get that athleticism. Dyren Espria was invisible in this game.
Not a huge surprise there. This game could have turned on Darlington Nagby putting the ball in frame.
Yeah.
He had an opportunity. Diego Valeri, I think the classiest moment of the game, just from skill, vision, technically, puts him in on goal with that beautiful outside of the boot kind of curled pass into space for him to run on. And this has been the complaint with Nagby, is just he lacks the cutting edge in the final third, in the box especially, and bounces it wide. Now, we gotta say it. The pitch at BBVA was not good.
It was a cabbage patch.
Yeah, I mean, I called it the surface of the moon during the knockout round because it is torn up. And, you know, there's some background Stu Holden gave us in that this field's been around for about a year and a half, I think he said.
And it's supposed to be for 3 years.
Yeah, and they're, like, wondering if this is the right surface, the right grass type to hold up in the conditions. Now, there have been extenuating circumstances. Hurricane Harvey dumped a ton of rain on this field. You got a college football team that plays there as well. There's a lot of things to get into this, but that's going to be a topic of conversation if we go back to Houston in the playoffs, the quality of the surface.
Yeah, you look at the second leg, though, and your Valeri needs just some moment in the first half to create a goal for them, to probably score for them. They can go up 1-0 in front of that crowd on that field. I think they have enough pieces to hold it together, but they can't go behind.
And then you get a break. After
Then you have a chance to get someone healthy.
Yeah, you at least get a break over the international period to say, okay, all right, maybe Diego Chara's not coming back, but we can figure this thing out. Watch that game on Sunday. We'll preview it later this week and dig in a little bit deeper as we get some more updates on the health side. Vancouver, Seattle, you know the scoreline here, folks. 0-0 at BC Place. This game just kind of – it hurt my soul a little bit. I just feel like the playoffs ideally are a time that we see the best that teams have to offer. And I know that's not always possible because of the circumstances, because of the scheduling, because of the format of the two-leg road goal series. But for Carl Robinson to decide that he was better off not starting Jordy Reyna, not starting Christian Teixeira, and I know they said they had Knox, but it feels a little bit more like they just were saving them because they came in later in the game, and not really go for it in any way against a team missing Clint Dempsey, Victor Rodriguez, Ozzie Alonso, and Gustav Svensson. I mean, to me, I can't blame Carl Robinson. Mm-hmm. I think he did what he had to do. Now he's thinking, you know what, we go back to Seattle. A result of just about any kind gets it done for us
all
outside
of
nil-nil.
Hot talk, and he starts the combo. With,
I know. Look,
I don't blame Carl Robinson.
I don't blame Carl Robinson, but doesn't mean I want to see it. Doesn't mean I want to watch that game. Doesn't mean it's a good advertisement for MLS. And I hate that phrase. But anybody, like, they're making fun of the game on SportsCenter. Like, mm-hmm. That's not fun to listen to.
One shot on goal between the two teams, and it was a header off like a scrum by Chad Marshall. There was no intent. And this is why, you know, there's been some complaints about the playoff format over, you know, whether it's on Twitter. Adrian Healy mentioned it during the game.
Everybody's putting out their, this is how I would fix it. You know, that's kind of, that's October and November in MLS. We know that's coming.
The fact is the Caps went into this game probably feeling like our best chance of advancing is to keep it at 0-0 until the final 30 minutes of Leg 2. And then you just try to go on that counterattack, and you nick one. And that is, look, it wouldn't be any different if it was a one-game knockout round type of scenario, but the Sounders would play different, and it would, you know, it would make home field advantage that much more significant because now it goes back to Seattle, and yeah, the Sounders have home field advantage, but any draw is good enough. For Vancouver.
Any goal by Vancouver. This is where the counterattack set piece side comes in.
Yep.
Any goal all of a sudden just kind of like quiets the stadium, takes Vancouver into place where they can really play to their strength, which is sitting back in that shell and inviting the Sounders forward. And, yeah, you have Clint Dempsey now, and maybe Nico Ladero is a little bit more productive in that sense. But I think they're better on the run, or at least in open space, than they are trying to break you down in tight spaces.
Yep.
So – I get it from Carl Robinson. I understand why he would do it, and he's feeling good about this. There's no doubt about that. It's just it's not a game I want to watch in the playoffs in a time of season when we're supposed to be seeing the best teams go out and battle for the ultimate prize.
Yeah, there's literally nothing from this game to break down or analyze. It was two teams just playing for the 0-0 and, you know, get to round two or get to leg two, and we'll see what Seattle have with Dempsey back and maybe Rodriguez as well. They become obviously a much more dynamic team with those guys.
Ozzie came off the bench.
Right. Yeah, so I think Jordy Reyna will probably start for Vancouver, though. I mean, Kyle Robinson is putting it out in, you know, on the Caps social media channels that, oh yeah, I don't think he's going to play, which is like, I think you're lying. So it should be a better game, but it's and no format is perfect. I have problems with the current format. I think that it incentivized exactly this type of game, this type of performance from the Caps.
I think they also got a little bit – his hands were tied a little bit, both sides of this, because of injuries, Brian Schmetzer as well, but also because of the way the scheduling worked, especially for the Caps, because you play – and I know you're at home in back-to-back games, but you have short rest between the two. You've got Jordy Reyna coming back from injury. We know he's your most dynamic player, although Freddie Montero is clearly your best – attacking player, in my opinion, both from a productivity standpoint and that he makes everybody else around him better. And then you have a game on short rest right afterwards, and then they come right back on Thursday. So it's like that's where it's extenuating circumstances.
They had short rest.
I just want to complain about it because I didn't like watching.
No, and I think when Carl Robinson says the injuries, I think if they had a week off, they would have started Jordy Reyna and Teixeira. I think there was a combination of why risk it, and we can throw another central midfielder in there, clog everything up, play 500 sideways and backwards balls, never break a single line.
I say tell our fullbacks not to cross the half-field line.
I think Nosa was 31 for 33 on passing. I don't think a single one broke a single line.
No.
Not even a midfield line. Like, everything was sideways and backwards for this team. They filled up the space, and Nico Lodero had no room to operate, and that's what they did, and that's what they wanted
and
to do.
And now they might be facing a Sounders team that could be without Chad Marshall because he was subbed off late, and if you don't have Chad Marshall back there defending, you know, helping defend set pieces, along with Roman Torres, obviously, then suddenly the Caps have a pronounced advantage on restarts.
And Torres and Marshall, that's the foundation of MLS Cup 2016 victory. Like, yeah, Nico Lodero got 4 goals in the playoffs, and he's the guy that got them. He got a score to advance. But the only reason you advance when you don't score much is because you have two guys in the back that you trust implicitly to be kind of the brains and the foundation of your team. And Chad Marshall is that side that directs, reads the game. Roman Torres goes and gets that ball, and he wins the physical battles, and he's one of the best in the league at going out and pressuring and making sure you don't get turned on him. But you got to have Chad Marshall behind him, marshalling everything, and I regret that so much. But that's just the deal. Look, this game's gonna go down on Thursday, Seattle hosting Vancouver on FS1, TSN, and TVA Sports. It'll be at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, of course, MLS Playoff Central before and after. For Vancouver, a scoring draw works here. Road goals will do it for them. For Seattle, they got to win this thing or it's 0-0 into extra time. We'll see what happens. That will decide the first conference finalist in either conference, Seattle and Vancouver, on Thursday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1 in the U.S., TVA Sports, TSN. We're going to have a break. On the other side, the Hot Take Hotline.
When my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
Back on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental.
It caught on and
playoffs are rolling along, and we're hoping for more goals. And, of course, all of the action is on SiriusXM FC Channel 85. So tune in for the games and tune in to MLS Playoff Central before and after all the games, every match night. We're there to bring you the context and all the highlights. So tune in for that. And remember, the Hot Take Hotline is open, 401-206-0MLS. Call or text or email us, extratime@MLSsoccer.com. Dave, let's dive in.
Klaesop Rock. At Klaesop Soul.
Klaesop Rock. Oh.
And Klaesop Soul.
Whoa. Okay.
Both of his names on Twitter. I don't know how you have two.
Good stuff.
Hot take. Folks complaining about two-legged series are forgetting 3 of the 4 games last week were trash, hot, stinky, nasty garbage. Also forgetting how glorious the Montreal-Toronto series was last year.
I don't know that they were trash. They weren't like back and forth affairs. There's no doubt about that. I won't begrudge that. But I do think that if you look back at the playoffs, and we did this last night, Doyle, because we got a little bit frustrated during that second game, we started to dig back through two-legged series. And there are good ones and there are bad ones, which you would expect. There's just not enough good ones, I guess.
Yeah, I don't actually mind the blowouts last week. Red Bulls fire entertained me because there were goals. There was intentionality in how the Red Bulls play. There was intentionality in how the Caps played against the Quakes. I think the two-leg series takes a lot of that intentionality out of the first leg, crams it all into the second leg. Yeah, Montreal-Toronto FC was the greatest playoff series in league history. I don't think there's any question about that. Apologies to Quakes and Galaxy from 2004, or 2003 rather. But that was the only one last year that I thought was particularly good. There weren't in 2015 or 2016 rather. I'm trying, or sorry, don't 2015. I think it was Columbus, New York was kind of fun.
Yeah.
But in general, I have enjoyed the knockout round games, the one-off games.
There
more.
Were fun times in Portland, Dallas that year as well. But it was—I don't think it was a universal thing. Over
I think
90
the fun thing in that series was watching Diego Chara single-handedly shrink the field. He was awesome in that series. But yeah, I think that bang for the buck, one and done, single elimination has generally delivered more than the two-leg series.
Nothing's perfect. We know that. Let us know what you think. How would you change the playoffs? Would you change them at all? Continue, Dave.
Mike Calhoun.
Woo,
D. Beasley,
what's up, Mike?
Mike Calhoun, legend. D. Beasley's going to be breaking his grandchildren's ankles and chuckles back into his rocking chair at Extra Time Radio.
Wait, DP?
D. Beasley.
Oh, DeMarcus D. Beasley. Beasley. I was like, yeah, he is. I just don't. When is he going to stop? It just doesn't feel like there's an end point for DeMarcus Beasley because, you know, there were question marks like, will Houston resign him? But he is as consistent as it gets at outside back, and I don't see like a ton of left backs coming through that you've got to throw him to the side on.
I mean, I think it's just about time. If it's not after this year, I think the next year is the DeMarcus Beasley farewell tour because he said he's been consistent, but he doesn't have the burst anymore, and he doesn't, you know, he can struggle with physicality, which we've seen, you know, from time to time in big spots, but. The guy's a legend, and he's always been underappreciated by U.S. national team fans. So hopefully he has one more big moment in him.
Speaking of, like, last hurrahs, here we have a Baron T, I guess we're going to call it, from EBFG out in Seattle. He says, I'm here to call out Ben Bear again. Do me a favor. Will you get Ben? Bring him nice and close. I'm not sure if he'll need some potholders, protective eyewear, or maybe some wielding apparel, but I want him to see what a hot take looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Clint Dempsey will not play in MLS next season. I can't guarantee that, but I can guarantee he won't play in the Rave Green.
You got to either come hot with it after you question Ben Bear or come not at all.
So he said, let's make no mistake, he's still good. He's still got a few more miles on him. He could still lead a team, though if I was his kindergarten teacher, I would have been forced to mark on his report card. Does not play well with others.
Yeah.
Seattle's attack generally looks more disjointed when he and Lodeiro are together. His option's coming up.
There's no way they exercise that option. I don't think he's back in Seattle next year. I do think he'll be somewhere in MLS, but I don't think it'll be
spicy.
Seattle. Yeah.
So I think if they had qualified for the World Cup, Seattle would have re-upped his. I think they would have picked up his option. He would have played through the World Cup, and it would have been his last year. Yeah.
Mm.
But now, where would he go? In MLS.
I mean, the first kind of, like, immediate things that jump to mind are just Texas, for one. Mm-hmm. Dallas might be going through kind of a reboot there, but he doesn't really fit the mold, and he doesn't fit the spending profile. Doesn't really fit the spending profile in Houston either. I mean, he's going to cost money still. He's still a productive player in this league. He's still a difference-making attacker, if not 90 minutes every single game of the year. So you kind of have to start matching up profile and resources and need. For a guy like that, and I mean, right now, off the top of my head, I'm struggling, but he would find a place. I have no doubt about that.
Resources, I think, is a tough argument to make because I would not spend a DP slot on 36-year-old or 35-year-old Clint Dempsey next year. I just wouldn't do it.
I mean, I don't foresee Clint Dempsey accepting something below a DP spot.
Then maybe our friends first hot take was actually correct. Maybe he ends up, I don't know, playing somewhere else for a
He's
year.
He's going to play for Monterey.
I was
going to
Clint Dempsey in League MX. I could get checked up for that.
He then also sent us a Wikipedia link to a list of burn centers in America for Ben Bear.
For Ben Bear.
To deal with his burn.
Yeah.
Last one, Ainsley Binder, listening to Friday's Extra Time Radio after Red Bull game is interesting. Josie didn't manhandle the back line, and your foot can be on the line. I was incorrect about long throw-ins, throw-ins in general. Someone sent me a very good little notes book that I can use for my U9 team.
Yeah,
so
that's
a useful show for
That's
me.
Accountability.
Yeah. It was a useful show.
And we appreciate that. As always, you're encouraged to call us out or disagree with us or, you know, bring your own hot take to the mix. 401-206-0MLS is the number. Call or text. We're going to leave for you right now, but we'll be back later this week. We'll preview everything on Sunday and wrap up that game on Thursday. Enjoy it, everybody.